Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Happy Friday to us all. Friday the 13th. Be careful out there, people. Don't get too scared. You can join us on the lines 855-752-4842. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a law review, playing out on the Civic Media Network 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays, has kindly stayed around in studio. Jim, thank you for doing so.
Doing a great Friday afternoon. Good callers, good conversation, all good things going on here in Civic Media.
Jess will get your calls at 855-752-4842. I had a couple out here on the text line. Drew had to hang up, got to head out to a fish fry, but he wants to challenge all our favorite conservatives to call right now. Thank you, Drew, and spout their crazy conspiracy theories for James Santel. Then I want to sit back and listen to James pick them apart.
All right, all right. Beyond just dogs and cats, right? You've got many things out there to address.
You think that Harris is a Marxist? Call on in.
Right. Let's talk. Let's talk.
Let's do it. Mary, let's take Mary. Mary's been very patient. We're going to get to the Georgia judge, Scott McAfee, dismissing two more counts yesterday in the Trump case. But Mary, you've been so patient. I want to get you in here. Thank you. Happy Friday, Mary. What do you got?
Yeah. Hey, Don. Good to hear you on the airwaves again.
Thank you.
I've got a comment and a question for Jim Santel. So Donald Trump has had us, he's led us, this country, on an eight-year journey of chaos. And some would even think that he operates out of a delusion of grandeur or psychosis. It's been very frustrating for all of, you know, all the unbelievable hoops that he's put our defenders of democracy through in dealing with his challenges. So my question to Jim is whether there's any precedent or ability, you know, for a government entity to judge a public official unfit, either physically or mentally, to serve in office. Any way to stop people like this, bottom line? Thanks, Jim.
Mary, a very good question, of course. And the answer is there are some things out there, of course. And one of them comes right from the Constitution of the United States of America. This is the 25th Amendment. Again, without going into great detail, I happen to have it. Dom's got it right here in his library in the studios here.
Yeah.
And again, there's a process by which the president, and it's been invoked a couple of times when a president recently has been under a surgical procedure, right? We've done that from time to time, a few hours, where you basically say, for this period of time, I'm plainly not going to be competent, with a small c, to operate, and therefore the vice president should take over. There is a larger process. It's been the subject of some movies out there and some thrillers. Where, in fact, you do get a president who is incompetent. We have seen that in recent news, right? From time to time during the Trump administration, there have been those folks who have said, gee, 25th Amendment, should we invoke that? It hasn't been done. It takes a lot, and there's a process back and forth that the authors of that way back in 1967 put together. But that is one mechanism, again, to basically strip the president from his or one day her official authorities. Of course, the others are out there. We know them well. It's impeachment, right? But that is a political process, plainly by the House of Representatives identifying articles of impeachment, basically charges. Gerald Ford very notoriously said, you can impeach for whatever you feel you need to impeach on. It's supposed to be high crimes and misdemeanors, but not necessarily. That's a process. Also has to go into the Senate for a trial. Not really a trial in the traditional sense of the word. That's a process as well. I would offer to you that the best one of all, Mary, is the one that you, I'm sure, know, and that is at the ballot box, right? And we've got that opportunity here in just a few weeks, 50 days or so, to make decisions about who we want in the office of the presidency. And as we were saying at the top of the first hour here, Americans need to look certainly to policies and practices, the substance of what these people will bring to the office. But you also want to have somebody who's got the judgment, the intellect, frankly, the stamina, if you will, to do it, the discretion, the basic intellectual capacities to do this job. and because an awful lot of things come up during the course of a term, that's the ultimate protection, if you will, is by going to the voting booths and
that
saying,
takes too
right,
long. I want it now.
Does, right, right. And all this other stuff, it's maybe more immediate, but also more unattainable.
But, I mean, yeah. 25th Amendment, that's what his cabinet's got to...
Absolutely. We've got to certify. And again, the president has an opportunity also to say, well, no, they were wrong. And that goes to the House of Representatives. You go back and forth and you can have these little hearings about whether or not indeed the president is incompetent.
But practically, that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
And impeachment,
right? Impeachment, we've seen that. We've never impeached we have impeached presidents. We've never convicted them and removed them. So that also, so there are these mechanisms.
But it's not like 50% conviction, right? You got to have what, supermajority or
right? Absolutely, right? And we've got all those other impediments to doing it.
More than half of the senators, if I recall, actually thought he should be impeached.
Absolutely,
but because it didn't meet their magical number,
precisely,
he remained as president.
Get to the 60 magic number here, and so he remains in office. That too is again, it underscores the political nature
right,
of that.
Right.
And also, I'm very quick to add, that's not a trial in any sense of the word. That's basically speechifying,
no.
If you will.
Come on, Trump already said it's trial. He said it in his appeal. I was tried once already. You can't try me again.
Not even close. Not even close,
but
right?
He said it.
He said it, right? And
says
therefore,
a lot of things. I mean, that can't be our standard of, well, he said it.
Well, right? I saw it on the internet.
Right? Oh, yeah. That's all true.
It was on TV. That's, I think, what he told David Muir the other night. It was on TV. And so if that's our standard, then we're all in great.
That's the low standard of the former chief executive, and God forbid we ever go there again.
Right. And even that's crazy point has a serious aspect to it, right? If you're relying upon TV, and we know what he means by that, for your information, as opposed to truly reliable sources across the board, counselors, advisors who are in those positions, again, because they've got the expertise, they've worked inside and outside government
and
for long periods of years.
And a track record of competence.
Exactly. Surround yourself with people who know what they're talking about and not the people who are just there for partisan purposes. It's the reason why, again, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, they also appointed Republicans to their cabinets, right? We've seen that, again, not because they simply, well, in part, they appear good if they do that, of course, but
sure.
But those are also people who have the expertise to do the jobs well. They happen to have come up through a political process that's identified with one party or another.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, in studio with me, 855-752-4842. Jim, let's get to it. The Georgia case,
yes.
Judge Scott McAfee dropped two charges. Apparently, according to CBS News, both counts deal with conspiracy and filing false documents. But apparently, the judge think that those counts fall under federal jurisdiction. Now, I'm no lawyer, Jim, but I would think, like, you know, they would have known that when they started.
Right. Again, this is the kind of thing that you look at. And again, Scott McAfee, I think he's one of those good judges who tries to do what's right.
Yeah.
We may or may not know what his politics are, but he's making decisions in both sides, in both directions that are animated by justice, right? And so he says basically that, yeah, the prosecutors don't have this authority to bring those charges because they're related to an alleged filing of false documents in federal court. So basically he says that, yeah, those U.S. attorneys can take care of that in the federal system, not here in the state court. It's almost certainly the right decision. And again, I have not read his opinion in any detail, but probably premised upon some good precedent. Once again, you think, gee, why didn't we note that at the time that we presented this to the grand jury?
Yeah.
We're also mindful of the fact that this is the same judge who a few months ago also dismissed six other counts. And there again, I look at that and we commented about this in a conversation with you, Dom. And I said, you know, the problem that the judge identified there was an insufficient notice, if you will, to the defendant, including Donald Trump and many others, about the basic predicates inside those counts. And I know that sounds very, very wonky. But basically, what he was saying,
they didn't dot the I's and cross the T's.
You know, and he said, but you got to have more than this. You got to provide the defendant with more information about what he or she has done. He was almost certainly right about that, too. That's I'll say it out loud. That's kind of sloppy draftsmanship.
Yeah.
You're doing this on behalf of the grand jury. Now, in that case, what Fannie Willis has done, she's appealed that already to the 11th Circuit. We know that
decision,
the large...
Not these most recent ones, right? The ones in April.
Yeah, the ones in April, right? And those are pending before the 11th Circuit. She also had the option, of course, to go back, as we saw recently in the federal case. You could go back and repair what we've done badly. You could do that. You could reindict.
But she wouldn't do that while this appeal is happening, right?
Well,
You
can do both. You can do both, right? And I'm not practiced and not learned in Georgia law, but generally you can do that kind of thing.
If that were to happen, they'd have to re-impanel another grand jury.
Absolutely. Okay, right. Okay. And that's exactly, again, what Jack Smith did recently in remedying, if you will, not the problems with the indictment, but what the Supreme Court said were the problems with the indictment. He went back, a whole new grand jury, and cleans up, if you will, what the indictment now shows. She could do that. Those six previous counts now also pending before the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And, of course, the big issue that they have is whether or not the decision also by Scott McAfee to keep Fannie Willis in that position as the prosecutor, finding, appearance of impropriety, but no conflict of interest would toss her off the case. That's what the defense has also brought to the appeals court.
Because of her relationship with her
Exactly. Right. So that's also pending there. In the meantime, good news to see that Scott Matt
When you say pending on that particular, that has not been decided yet?
It has not been decided. Okay. The 11th Circuit, the good news in terms of justice moving along, they have scheduled oral argument for that in December. And so there'll be oral argument.
On whether or not Fannie Willis can stay on the case.
Exactly.
And now, right? have they scheduled a date for the
decision? For the
appeal of the April rulings?
My sense is that they're wrapping all this up into one. But they may, in fact, kind of bifurcate those down the road. We don't know exactly when they'll be deciding. Probably sometime in early 2025, we'll get decisions on both of those things. In the meantime, again, interesting that Scott McAfee, even while this is on appeal on those discrete issues, is still doing things the trial court.
Yeah.
Again, indicating that, hey, he's not stopping here. He's plainly not scheduling a trial anytime soon, not making evidentiary decisions. But when it comes to these practical issues about what the indictment should and should not contain, there he's acting.
If Fannie Willis is removed from the case, does an assistant come in and just keep moving forward, or do they have to start all over
again?
It's
fascinating to see what the 11th Circuit will say. They could say, for example, you individually.
So they could determine how it comes out.
They could describe this in a number of different ways. They could say, Fannie, because of your particular relationship, you cannot do this, in which case presumably a deputy in the office could go ahead.
Yeah.
They could also be much more sweeping, and this is what Donald Trump and others have asked for, which is because what you have done has so tainted the entire office, we've got to throw the entire office off this case, and then you've got to find another office, presumably in Georgia, who picks this up and prosecutes. That sends things back quite a bit, and unlikely they'll do that. My guess is, in the end, they will affirm Scott McAfee, who wrote a pretty good opinion supporting his decision.
Keeping her on the case.
Keeping her on the
They'll
case,
They'll presumably affirm that.
I think
that.
They will, yes,
And it doesn't really matter anyway, because even if they didn't, they threw her off, they got to redo it. If Trump doesn't win, we got all the time in the world.
Absolutely.
Because the election is over, and Trump won, man. He pushed us back past the election. Folks, this is the Dom Salvis Show. Coming back, your calls, 855-752-4842. Welcome back to the show, 855-752-4842. James Santel in the studio, just on the board, working the phones. You can join 855-75-CIVIC Friday the 13th. You know, it's times like these, I like to sit back and remember the late, great Dr. Hannibal Lecter. Mm. Happy Friday the 13th. Mm.
Once again, a part of our campaign this year. How did that happen, right?
Insane asylum, integration asylum, you know, I don't know. Does he know? Does he care? Does anyone know? Does anybody care? I mean, if Joe Biden, remember Joe? Remember that guy? He was like, I don't know, like 6 weeks ago was running. Now he did have something to say today. Maybe we'll get to that later about this whole issue in Springfield, Ohio. But, you know, if Joe Biden would stand up and start talking like this.
Oh, my gosh.
The right, would just be right. just beside themselves.
Right, like, right.
And but they put up with it. This right. is somehow okay with their guy.
We know that Barack Obama almost was tossed out of the White House on that day that he wore that tan suit. Remember
Could
that?
You believe it? Tan.
Tan.
You know, and his wife showed her exactly, arms.
Right. Scandals in America. Right.
Yeah. I think one of the daughters smoked a joint. Yeah, I know. And here we are. The guy tries to overthrow the government, and the right's like, yeah, he's my guy. That'll be great. Let's get to some of the callers. You've been very patient. 855-752-4842. Dana from La Crosse. Hey, Dana, welcome back. What do you got for us?
Jim, it's been a while.
Yeah, Dana.
Thanks, man.
Hey, so what was earlier a pretty ridiculous story is becoming pretty serious, and that's the treatment of the Haitian people in Springfield, Ohio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been thoroughly debunked in so many ways, so much so that I've learned the complete history of how those people all ended up in Springfield.
Right. Yeah.
And the long and short of it is they saved that town. It was dying.
Economically, right? Absolutely.
Said, right. Yes, they came in and saved that town for the business, for manufacturing. That being said, and they're welcome there. The people love them. That being said, as I said, it's been thoroughly debunked everywhere. These two guys, Vance and Trump, they have plenty of staff to keep them informed, and they know damn well this has been debunked, and yet they're still spreading it, doubling it down, expanding on it. And I'm just wondering two things. First of all, Vance is still a sitting senator, I believe. Could he be censured by Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate? And secondly, could what Trump is doing be considered hate speech? And could that be indictable? I'll take your answers off the air. Good to talk to you guys. Have a great weekend. Go Badgers.
Go Badgers. Sorry about that, Dana. Thanks for the call, man. Good points. I mean, politically, sure, he could be censured, right?
Sure.
If they wanted to go down that road, what would it accomplish? I'm not sure.
It establishes the voice of the Congress, right? That this is not acceptable. We've got the voice of this very radio show saying just that, right? And other voices out there, you know, hate speech. When it comes to that, we permit a lot in America, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of our First Amendment tradition. But there are also limits to that. You cannot be advocating for violence. You cannot be advocating for harm to people if you wrap that inside hate speech. And that's where the distinction is drawn. Supreme Court has made that very clear as well. We'll let you say a lot of stupid things. John Kerry talked about that in his campaign a number of years ago. We'll let you say a lot of stupid things in America. We won't let you advocate for violence. We won't let you advocate for the attacks on people in America. There's a difference.
But also with a guy like Donald Trump and the things that he says, and certainly there is consequence to his words. There were more bomb threats today in Springfield, Ohio. You know, you got apparently some elementary schools were shut down.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure there's Republican mega parents who now had to be worried about, number one, is their child going to die? Because, you know, that happens.
Right.
And number two, to go have to, you know, arrange childcare, you know, be disruptive. When people do that, you know, there's consequence to that. But Donald Trump, if he were to go up there and say, I don't know, you know, you got to fight like hell, you're not going to have your country, you know, as a also as free speech, but also as a running politician, it seems like they're giving them a lot of leeway, a lot of room to say whatever, because who's going to prosecute them? Hell, it took them forever to prosecute them for January 6th.
Right. And frankly, this is why this trial, which at some point, perhaps in American history, we will see. This is the federal insurrection trial right now, once again pending before Tanya Chutkan. Lots of activity going on there as well. Some briefs being filed about whether the immunity decision applies to that. But in the context of that trial, the superseding indictment there, Jack Smith has not dropped the language that talks about advocacy on that day. It's not a core piece of any of the four counts, but it animates. It's this narrative that he puts forth in this grand jury indictment. It'll certainly be a part of the presentation of the trial, again, in support of a finding by a jury, again, beyond a reasonable doubt, perhaps one day, if we can get that to trial, if indeed we have a president and administration at that time that does not stop that case from going forward.
Any chance we'll see any of those, you know, little mini trials they talk about in between now and the election?
Highly unlikely. What Tanya Chutkan has said recently in this hearing of just about a week or so ago is she's going to accept from Jack Smith a memorandum on this seminal issue about whether or not the Supreme Court opinion in the immunity area should prevent the prosecution. Jack Smith has all kinds of theories. He's already pared back the indictment in the wake of the Supreme Court decision. So he's going to file that brief later on. We've got the defense. They'll respond to that. We'll get a reply from the Department of Justice. And so that gets us well into the latter part of 2025. She's got to decide that then. She'll make her decision sometime in 2025. Interesting to see what will happen, assuming that this will go forward in some way, shape, or form, whether there really will be what's called an interlocutory appeal on that, or at some point, you let all of this simply go forward to trial, as it did in front of Judge Mershon, and then you wrap all this up and appeal it in one fell swoop. These are pretrial rulings she's issuing on. Right. And in the normal course of things, you wait. When we go to the Seventh Circuit here in the Eastern District of Wisconsin, you pretty much wait for the entire case to be resolved before you do that. Yes, these are big ticket items. I understand that completely. But at some point, we need to get these cases tried. We need to get Donald Trump sentenced also in that Juan Merchan case. He has now postponed that until Thanksgiving time of this year.
Folks, that is James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, a Law Review. We're going to come back and take some more of your calls at 855-752-4842. And believe it or not, there's still a couple of cases that we need to get to. Now, did we wrap up everything in Georgia? I mean, is Georgia kind of like...
Those are the big things, big ticket items, right? No time for a trial anytime soon, but at some point, probably in 2025, maybe Scott McAfee has the capacity to set that on for trial and go ahead and trial those defendants who are still there.
Because that's a RICO case. That's a sweeping case. There's lots of folks besides Donald Trump that are indicted.
And those RICO counts remain. Nothing about what Scott McAfee has done strips away the RICO focus of that case. Going to be a big case to try, but he can do it, and he can put that together maybe sometime in 2025.
This is the Dom Salvia Show. It is Friday the 13th. You can join us 855-752-4842. We'll be right back.
And he said, no way. And I said, way.
Lost by a whisker.
Rose and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Phone lines are open, 855-752-4842. Going to get there in a moment. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, the Law Review, 9 to 11 a.m. here on the Civic Media Network on Saturdays. That's tomorrow, folks. Jim, thanks for sticking around.
Pleasure.
All these different cases.
It's a lot. It is a lot, right?
I had one particular question on the January 6th case. I know we're bouncing around a little bit here, but when Special Counsel Jack Smith he reimpaneled a grand jury,
right?
To address the changes forced upon him by the U.S. Supreme Court and absolute immunity during official acts and so on and so forth. Why wouldn't he just take a black marker to the original to the documents, all the charges already? Maybe drop some, adjust them, edit some things out, and just keep moving forward,
right? Because in the end, you're going to present that indictment, the charging document. A jury is going to see that. And you want a document that makes internal in sense in terms of its integrity, its substance. If you've got some things that are crossed out, that are redacted, it just doesn't have the compelling force that you would otherwise have with a unified document. And the other thing that he accomplishes here is he says, okay, Supreme Court, I don't agree with you. He's not saying that publicly. But here, America, is what happened. We have gotten rid of all of these allegations involving engagements with the Department of Justice. All that stuff in the first indictment that was criminal in nature, that's gone. Who did that? The Supreme Court did that. And so he goes back to a new grand jury, maybe anticipating your next question here, Dom. Why do you go to a new grand jury? Why not just go back? Well, the answer is maybe the first one has long been dismissed. But the other reason is just this. You presented all of this information, including Department of Justice stuff, all the other things that you've now taken out of the indictment. You presented that to the old grand jury. You don't want them tainted by that process. And so you put together a new grand jury. He presents nothing about the Department of Justice, a few other things around the edges. They see this with brand new eyes, and he restricts the evidence.
Brand new people. And they saw the evidence that he presented. Absolutely. And they also, like the previous grand jury, said, yes.
Probable cause to believe that this particular defendant engaged in these crimes. Four counts, those remain in place. And then he also goes back and adds and increases the velocity, if you will, of the language. He also talks more about this being truly a private kind of a thing. Talks about candidate Trump as opposed to President Trump. Talks about his private attorneys, his private counsel.
Yeah.
What he's doing there is he's also following up on the Supreme Court's bifurcation, if you will, official and unofficial, formal and personal acts. He's embracing that. Again, this grand jury looks at all that through these brand new eyes and says, yes, indeed, that's what this evidence supports. You've got a document now that you can go forward on, and also argue to Tanya Chutkan, nothing that you need to do anymore, Tanya. You do not need to excise this any further.
Yeah.
Don't agree with the defense at all. I've already done that.
The grand jury
already did that. Just go ahead, schedule this on for trial.
Make the judge's job easier.
Absolutely. Strategically, time-wise, it is brilliant. And again, Jack Smith, kudos to you.
855-752-4842. Let's get to some of our patient callers. We appreciate you. Annie from Watertown, welcome. What do you got for us?
I don't have anything legal, but I thought I just got a kick out of this. I was really bothered with Trump saying that Germany didn't have any success with their cutting back on, they're promoting turning over to renewables.
Oh, the green energy, right, yeah.
Yeah, and especially since the idea since, you know, Bush even and then Obama, oh, he's embarrassing us. I mean, the lies about that. Well, the actual the foreign ministry in Germany, I mean, it's something really official. I haven't found it online or anything. But they released a thing saying, well, no, he's wrong.
He's getting fact-checked by Germany.
Our renewable energy is more than 50%, blah, blah, blah. And we're shutting down nuclear and coal plants. The opposite of what he said. And they finished with, and we don't eat cats and dogs.
No. Annie, we're becoming a punchline, or still a punchline.
For the international community now.
Right.
It's not just inside our borders, right?
Yeah. Thank you for the call, Annie. Appreciate that. It is embarrassing. 855-752-4842. It's also a text line, and Steve from Milwaukee, he chimed in, and perhaps this will give us a segue to the other cases. Steve says, the documents case is such a sham. It's a sham, Jim. Do you think the documents case is a sham?
It's actually one of the most straightforward of the four cases that has been brought. Again, this is also the product of, remember this, of course, this is a grand jury in South Florida that looked at this evidence and said, yes, we conclude by probable cause that these events did in fact take place. Then later on, not only the transfer, the acquisition of these documents, maybe the use of them. Remember, he goes back and the grand jury also finds obstruction of justice and trying to move those documents around and keep the authorities from finding them. That's also a part of this case.
Donald Trump, through his attorneys, lied about what he had and when he had it more than once, to my understanding.
Absolutely. The day before that the folks are coming down there to look around, the documents are being moved and all of that, again, the product of a clear investigation, the assessment, not just mine, but of people who've studied these things in much greater detail. It is a very compelling case. If indeed you can get that one to trial, this is the one in which Eileen Cannon has said, well, wait a minute. He takes up what Clarence Thomas has said, that Jack Smith is improperly authorized, is not properly appointed by the attorney general. For that reason, the whole case has got to go. She shuts it down. That is the case. That is the case. That, right?
I mean, special counsels have been around for a long time. Absolutely. This has been challenged before, right? I mean, what
repeatedly.
Was there anything in Thomas's conclusion or in Judge Cannon's rejection of this case that would suggest that there's some new evidence or new legal theory that would throw out, you know, this whole time we've been doing special counsels, we've been unconstitutional?
Right. Nothing at all. And everybody looked at that on all sides of political aisle and said, you know what, there's no there. This goes to, there is some Supreme Court precedent. Appeals courts, district courts have enforced this. Frankly, with respect to presidents, again, on both sides of the political aisle, this is not something new. Right. And so, again, the 11th Circuit will almost certainly overturn
Ken Starr was the special prosecutor.
Absolutely, right. Whitewater turns into Monica Lewinsky, and all that happens. Ronald Reagan.
So according to Cannon, and according to Justice Thomas, that was totally unconstitutional. And Bill Clinton, if you believe what they're telling you now, was a victim of a government persecution.
Right. It's just absurdity. And again, even in her opinion, although it reads like it's great authority, what she's doing is she's plucking up something that's very charitably called dicta, which means just basically I'm musing on things that should be out there and premises. Anticipate the 11th Circuit will send this back. The question is whether the 11th Circuit, Jack Smith hasn't asked about this yet, will the 11th Circuit send it back to her or will they say, you know what? We've seen this judge enough now, and we've overturned her decisively enough. We need to get a new district court judge. There's simply too much of a record of bias here.
They could voluntarily, on their own volition, do that even without Jack Smith specifically asking them to do so.
They could. It's called sua sponte, on their own doing it. The judges can do what they want to do when it comes to crafting this. Jack Smith has not specifically asked for it. It makes it a little bit more compelling for him to do it if you've got a request from one of the parties. But interesting to see what happens there. And just by way of small correction, this is the case for the 11th Circuit. Before, we were talking about the Scott McAfee. That case is on appeal to a Georgia appeals court.
The Georgia RICO case.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So the 11th Circuit is for the documents case.
Exactly. That's the federal case.
All right. Well, Steve, there you go. Perhaps not a sham. And I mean, realistically, beyond, you know, all the circumstance now and how long it takes to get to trial and whether there's evidence, all any damage from those documents is probably already done.
It is.
If he was somehow distributing or got, you know, who knows what he was doing. I mean, hoarders hoard, I get that. But if there was any nefarious reason, if there was money to be made, I assume that's already been done.
Right. And probably at some point when our grandchildren are doing these kinds of research exercises, maybe at some point the government will release information, maybe 100 years from now, about the consequences of what has happened just in the past couple of years. Highly likely that if indeed these made their way into the hands of people who are not our friends over there in the international community, entirely possible people have been killed as a result of this.
Yeah.
And disclosures of national security secrets, we don't know. Our government's not going to come out and say, guess what?
Yeah, guess what we got.
What just happened here? But consequences cannot be overstated. The case, to respond to Jack once again, it is not a sham case at all. It's a very compelling case. What the reason why it is there is just that. This is potentially a compromise of our national security. And that's the reason why it's not just a documents case. That is simply a matter of, the president packing up some things in the boxes as he's leaving the White House and took them with him to his private residence.
With his golf shirts and his golf balls, just a lot of stuff.
The ashtrays, the paperweights, those kinds of things. No, this is much more significant. And be interesting to see if during the course of the trial on that case, whether there can be presented without compromising national security, the consequences of what might have happened that could be in the public domain trial.
Let's go down that wormhole just a moment if we can. Rabbit hole, I guess. If he did these things, if Donald Trump, you know, sold out for benefit, money, whatever Donald Trump sees as value, our state secrets after he was president, you know, who would prosecute that and how would we ever find out?
Sure. So once again, the subject of
National security portion.
Absolutely.
Like, hey, here's the thing. You gotta be, how do you balance that?
Right. There's a group inside the Department of Justice called the National Security Division, just like the Antitrust Division. Right. An awful lot of lawyers who look at these kinds of things. You've got the FBI admittedly doing domestic investigations, but you also have that group out there called the CIA and other national security, international security entities, all of them are all over this. There are reports inside the Department of Justice, inside other agencies, confirming the results of this. At some point, the discretionary decision has got to be made, to answer your question, about whether or not we can disclose all of that without further compromising our national security and putting this in the public domain, in a public trial in front of a federal judge. That's a judgment call that maybe a future attorney general is going to have to make.
I mean, that wouldn't be a great look for America to have a
it
former.
It would not be.
Right.
It so would not
in,
be at
in
all.
Some regards, maybe they would just not go there.
Absolutely.
And just right. let it lie. And hey, there's a consequence to voting.
Exactly.
And if you get someone like that, we're not going to go there.
Right. You make those judgment calls all the time. And again, presumably the timing on this would be very important too. We're not going to get disclosures of this anytime soon. At some point, with all due respect to the human beings who are out there, at some point, you may not have defendants to indict anymore.
Yeah, right.
That may happen.
That may happen.
That may happen.
855-752-4842. Let's get going on the lines. Got a couple of minutes left here. Dave from Heartland, you're up. Welcome, Dave. What do you got for us?
Yes. How about Trump saying that immigrants are eating pets?
Yes.
Let's not forget that Donald Trump is enamored with the great Hannibal Lecter, who would eat the owners of those pets, the people that own the pets. That's who he likes.
Right. Yeah, apparently that's totally fine. The actual cannibal that he references all the time is great. But these false stories, Dave, about Haitian immigrants eating the pets, well, that's just a bridge too far.
It is stunning. And Dave, I'm sure you, like everyone else, remembers that phrase, I ate his liver with fava beans and nice Chianti, right? Right? That sort of thing. And again, isn't it stunning that in context of the single most important thing that we do as a nation, that is elect a president every 4 years, this is what we are talking about.
I know. And not only that, those Haitians are here at our request. Yes. They're here legally. They're here legally. And Trump's acting like referring to this group of legal immigrants. I mean, the exact kind of immigration that the Republicans and the GOP claim they want. We want legal immigration. They're legal. And yet they're out there vilifying them, of course, racist, trying to make them seem like they're animals.
Hugely problematic, not only for this election, but down the road. The things that you insert in the minds of young people, people who don't know better, that is the kind of thing, that's the education, very bad education that we accomplish, and it has its consequences long term.
It's an education. It's the Dom Salvia Show. James Santel, just on the board. Come back with us. 855-752-4842.
Designer suits, Gucci gloves, Chelsea boots. All my demons are cocaine fueled electrical. Sugar tooth, caramel.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now on the lines. 855-752-4842. James Santel, stick around. The last segment of the day. Jim, you mentioned talking about the late, great Dr. Hannibal Lecter. Anthony Hopkins, according to The Hill a few months ago, said, Hannibal, that was a long time ago. God, that was over 30 years. I'm shocked and appalled what you've told me about Trump.
Absolutely. And, yeah, right, Anthony Hopkins himself says, you know what? This has no place in a normal, decent discussion. It was, if you will, entertainment with a small e. That's where it should stay. It was, again, fantastic portrayal by him, obviously.
Right.
But what are we talking about, Donald Trump? Really? You're invoking that kind of an image, and where you, it just defies understanding at any time, including any time the past 30 years. Again, what is the message that Americans should take away from that? All of this, these strange references. Is this the kind of person who is bringing into the office of the presidency the cognitive understanding, the judgment the critical thinking that I want my president to have is
this. Are you
this,
not entertained?
This,
man, right, come right? on. This guy was, and I never watched The Apprentice, but right. he was a reality TV star.
Right. Right.
What you all of a sudden you have high expectations of all those right, fancy right. words, man? Right. Come on.
And to this day, I look at NBC and say, you know, you've pumped Donald Trump into our households for 14 years. Are we surprised that people now look at him and say, geez, there's something going on there. There wasn't then, there isn't now. But unfortunately, he is on the ballot in about 50 days for decision.
Well, we're going to keep going. We're convinced people. And maybe this will help. We're going to go to cut number one in just a moment, Jess. Nathan Clark, he was the father. His son was killed in Springfield, Ohio. Yes. His son was on a bus, and it got hit by a driver of Haitian origin, and his son was killed, and several other kids were injured. Now, J.D. Vance and Trump, they're invoking his son, Aiden, I believe. They're invoking his name in their politics, and he said something today. I heard it earlier, and I teared up, man. I couldn't even believe it because, you know, we joke about this, but here's a guy whose son is literally dead, and the MAGAs are using it for political fodder. Let's hear cut number one, please, Jess.
I wish that my son, Aiden Clark, was killed by a 60-year-old white man. I bet you never thought anyone would ever say something so blunt. But if that guy killed my 11-year-old son, the incessant group of hate-spewing people would leave us alone. They make it seem as though our wonderful Aiden appreciates your hate. Using Aiden as a political tool is, to say the least, reprehensible for any political purpose. And speaking of morally bankrupt, politicians, Bernie Moreno, Chip Roy, J.D. Vance, and Donald Trump, they have spoken my son's name and used his death for political gain. This needs to stop now. They can vomit all the hate they want about illegal immigrants, the border crisis, and even untrue claims about fluffy pets being ravaged and eaten by community members. However, they are not allowed, nor have they ever been allowed to mention Aiden Clark from Springfield, Ohio.
Keep his name out of your damn mouth.
Absolutely. And goes on, I think at the end of that speech, to say, it has got to stop. It has got to stop. And as you said, Dom, if that doesn't make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, it doesn't make you tear up, there's something wrong with you, right?
And if you use that, and you continue to do that for political purposes, you have no
right.
morals.
Right.
Joe Biden took exception to this as well. Cut two, please, Jess.
Simply wrong. There's no place in America. This has to stop what he's doing. It has to stop.
So there's Joe.
Yeah. There you go.
Simply put, it's got to stop. I mean, the force that he put into that, I don't think I've heard that.
He's disgusted, and everybody
right,
should
rightly
be.
So.
Yeah, everybody should
right,
be.
Right. And are you prepared for four more years of that, America?
I'm not prepared for four more hours
right,
of that, Jim.
Right.
855-752-4842. Pardon. Cam from Appleton. Welcome, Cam. What do you got for us?
Hey, I remember that it's actually really easy to do geopolitical tracking with people's content that they take in online. And what I mean by that is it would be really damn easy to select an area on a map for where Mar-a-Lago is roughly, and then force feed ads that you think Trump would click on. And because Trump is unique, you would be able to see that he travels in different locations. So by that session ID, you'd be able to see which one is probably Trump, even if it's anonymous. And you could probably target some really ridiculous stories for dollars, literal dollars. It would not be hard to see what ones you and your friends can pull together to figure out what he can repeat back to people. And on the Haitian thing, every time I hear him say Haitians now, it's digging up a memory of the Haitian from the early 2000s show Heroes, and his big grin. That's all I can see now, and it's, I don't know why that needed to get dredged up. But,
well,
yeah,
and Cam, and thanks for the call, man. Have a great weekend. Of course, the Haitians, they're legally, man. You know, this is exactly what you claim that you want, Republicans, and you're denigrating them with lies and racist statements.
Right. Just to underscore that again, you made the point a couple of times very compellingly, Dom. There is nothing illegal about their being present here. They're not subject to deportation. They follow the processes. They're properly here. They're what makes America great and strong. And again, somehow this is the group that you're vilifying. We know why this he's doing this. We know exactly why he's doing this, because you're appealing once again to the lowest common denominator in people. And you're also appealing to people who you think are stupid. And that really underscores so much of what Donald Trump says. He assumes that you don't know better, and that your sense of not only how civics work and government works, all those things, that you are dumb. And he is sending that message to you every time he talks this way.
He knows everything, so therefore everybody else is dumb. Catherine, you can have the last 30 seconds. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hey there.
I just wanted to say that I really think that maybe the town of Springfield could do something, and I'm not sure what that is legally, because I think somebody's going to get killed from this. Some people have even said now that they're eating people, you know, some of his, you know, followers. So is there anything that can be done, Jim?
Voices that we speak out about, right, and stop this from happening. And certainly if law enforcement identifies threats, absolutely, they need to respond quickly and decisively.
Thank you, James Santel. Pleasure to see you again, man.
Always a pleasure, Dom.
Look forward to doing it again. Thank you, Jess. Hell of a week. Have a great weekend, folks. Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. We'll be back here on Monday. Pete Schwabba with Nightlight coming up next. Have a happy weekend.
They never fire anybody.
Donald Trump was fired by 81 million people.